You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 61 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
Oh, you waited too long this time. Too long. And we are coming to you live from Boulevard Park, Washington, the home of the Peltoncast. I don't know what do we say in Boulevard Park? Just, it's great.
It feels good to be back.
It does.
In Boulevard Park. This felt like, this day that we've had here has felt like the good old days. It felt like the summer of 1999.
Yeah, except we didn't do as much drinking during the summer of 1999.
No.
I mean, you years. Might have been age 14. I know I didn't at age 17. Yeah. Your family is out of town on vacation. Uh-huh. And so we went and played basketball at this school near our house where we grew up.
I could have done anything in the world.
That's true.
I could have been anywhere in the world, but I chose to be here with you.
You chose to be in Boulevard Park.
I chose to go to Boulevard Park, play basketball with you. I could have eaten any meal.
Oh, no.
I could have eaten at Sisters and Brothers right there in Georgetown. I could have eaten a tavern burger at Loretta's. But instead, this is a little bit of a spoiler alert for later. I ate at Costco.
You really did. That is your dedication to reviewing burgers for our search for Seattle's best burger. And then we did go to Loretta's and have a drink there. And it was nice weather. It was the summer. We listened to rap music. It was very much a classic Pelton Brothers summer experience.
Okay, before we get into this anymore, we should talk about the beer that we're drinking.
We are drinking the Ninkasi Beer Run IPA.
Okay.
Let me read what the bottle has to say here. Whether making a run to the corner store or through the mountains, this gloriously crisp and flavorful IPA is worth grabbing. With bold hops and a lively citrus kick. You see, kick is kind of a running thing, too.
Oh, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
Enjoy Beer Run from start to finish.
I'm just thinking beer bottles are very confident about how good they are.
That's true.
What if there's a beer bottle that's like, you know, you might not like it.
You know, you think back to the most interesting man in the world.
Uh-huh.
Don't always drink beer, but when I do, I prefer Dos Equis.
Yes,
it was
very
soft.
Hard sell. It's like this beer run should be like, hey, we're an 86 on Beer Advocate. It's not terrible. Like, there are better options out there, but you know, like, it's a pretty solid beer. It's an above replacement level beer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and this is a new thing for them. The one downside here is to celebrate Eugene's reputation for running, which
it's
is not one of my
what?
Favorite thing. One of my favorite places. I actually did not know for sure that Ninkasi was from there until I read about that. So that was new to me. I like Ninkasi slightly less now. It is fair to say.
I'm going to spit this beer out on the first drink of it.
Harsh but fair. A harsh but fair reaction. Well, let's give this a try here. That's pretty good. A little crisp, but some strong citrus notes in there is advertised, I would say. I'm curious to see your thoughts on this.
Well, I think a toast is in order.
A toast is in order to our loyal listener, Ben B, who is suddenly an internet celebrity. Not for anything he tweeted about the Seahawks, not for repeatedly tweeting videos of Marshawn Lynch getting stuffed at the one, which was amusing, but instead for finding on Reddit a video of Klay Thompson bricking a 360 dunk attempt in China and commenting on it. This NBA players go over to China to show what they can do. I forget exactly.
I'm paraphrasing. Really mangled that one, but okay.
Butchered the actual tweet. But it went viral. It was on ESPN.com. It was on every website. Far more popular than any tweet I have ever had.
Yeah, he's way more famous than you are.
That's true.
It's some of the most likes and retweets I've ever seen on any tweet.
It was really incredible. So a toast to Ben B for becoming an internet celebrity.
Cheers.
For a day.
He had another much less successful tweet after that.
What was that?
And that was of a post that he had on Seahawks Reddit of people who would be important to follow from Seahawks Twitter. And there was a category at the top.
Was there?
And it was labeled Seahawks Twitter deities.
Okay, who was on that group?
Somehow you. Mina Kimes and the team. You're up there in deities with the actual team that they're talking about.
I think that's fair. That's where I would put myself. You did get mentioned in the comment about me.
That's I'm always on your coattails.
Yeah,
right there. Do you feel like I can notice a little bit of a glow to you?
Yeah. Yeah, that's reasonable.
Do you feel like a deity after that?
I mean, it's weird because of the fact that I don't tweet very much about the Seahawks. I definitely don't have 75,000 followers because of my Seahawks tweets. In fact, it's fair to assume that I lose 2 followers every time I tweet about the Seahawks.
When you tweet about the Seahawks?
Yeah. NBA fans are like, what is this? Which is why I've kind of shifted some of my Seattle sports tweeting to @PeltonCast. But I would say to any new listeners who found the PeltonCast via Ben B's shout out on Reddit, welcome aboard. And we are not going to talk about the Seahawks at all this week.
Basically, won't be mentioned.
Really, this is nothing to talk about. It's the end of June. This is the deadest period of the Seahawks offseason.
But I would say that we have some big things planned.
Yeah, coming in store. So please stay with us. Maybe even if you don't want to listen to the rest of this podcast, check back in a month or so.
Yeah, just turn it off. You and I are both going to Seahawks training camp in August.
We are. Oh, by the way, Mom wants to know if you can get her tickets for that. Is that too late?
I think it's too late.
Okay.
Yeah, she's out. No, I might be able to figure it out.
Okay.
I know a guy.
Okay.
No, I don't know. I just have season tickets. And the window is already closed for getting the tickets. But I'll try to figure it out for him. But also special guests, commentary, takes, percentage chances of winning. That's the kind of stuff we'll be talking about when Seahawks season starts.
Advanced analytics, exactly what everyone wants when it comes to the Seahawks.
Hydroplanes.
Jermaine Kearse defense. Daryl Bevel rationalization.
Yes.
Oh, it's going to be great. I look forward to it.
I hope they tie a game again this year. Because we could defend tying also.
We can. Should we talk about the Costco burger?
Yes. So, I'm curious. See, when we eat these burgers, it's almost in complete awkward silence. So I have no idea what you thought of this burger.
You don't? I mean, okay, so let's first give some people some context. So if you're somehow unfamiliar with the concept of the Costco food court, it's driven by
who
the...
Who are you?
I mean, there may be people that live in places where there aren't Costcos. I don't know. I don't know where you listen to this podcast.
I pity them.
Or they don't have Costco memberships, I guess. The $1.50 Costco hot dog.
Plus soda.
Like, we couldn't do a PeltonCast search for Seattle's best hot dog because it's indisputably
it's numbers
the
one through five.
Like, it ruins other hot dogs for you because you're like, okay, this is a good hot dog. But why does it cost more than $1.50? And mm-hmm. Why am I not getting a soda, refillable soda with it?
For the record, I love hot dogs. But I'm very happy that we're not doing a PeltonCast search for Seattle's best hot
dog.
You
had a hot dog earlier today.
Oh, yeah. I went to a baseball game. Had to have a hot dog.
Yeah. Back in the day, I liked to... At one point, it was pairing the hot dog with the slice of pizza, uh-huh. which is $2. Then eventually moved on to...
You're talking about your Costco order.
The chicken bake, which is a staggering amount of, like, terribly unhealthy food
yes.
for one meal.
Wait, so you had the chicken bake and a hot dog?
I did. I was much heavier at that point, as you'll recall.
You're lucky you didn't die. I know that physically I look like I often eat chicken bakes and hot dogs at the same time.
You don't?
But I don't do that very often. The chicken bake is just so excessive when you're eating it.
It is really excessive in hindsight. So now, worst case, I'd maybe go with the hot dog and the Caesar salad.
But not the burger.
All right, let's talk about the burger. It was bad.
Bad. So the idea. So the reason that we went there.
First, our loyal listener Matt
Williams, not the baseball
always
player,
has to be referred to by his full name, told us about the Costco burger several weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And my first response is, yeah, I'm pretty dubious about this.
our instincts to not go and have the Costco burger were right. it was bad. I don't know. I think that's so funny.
It just straight up was bad. Then my hopes got kind of up. So the reason we went today is because the Seattle Times wrote about the Costco burger today. And here's the headline.
Okay.
Costco is testing a new burger in Seattle, and it might remind you of Shake Shack.
In as much as that it's a burger.
You know what it reminded me? that I want to go to Shake Shack when I go to Las
I
Vegas.
I thought that also.
And not to eat this burger ever again.
Wow.
It was bad.
I think you were maybe even a little bit more down on the burger than I was.
Like, okay, first off, our friend of the pod, Nate Duncan, former guest, he once, well captured, to me, there is a really high, alternative cost to each meal. Because as you mentioned earlier, we could have been eating Sisters and Brothers. We could have been eating the Tavern
Burger. I'm a little bit sad that we didn't do that.
Fortunately, I'm going to eat the Tavern Burger tomorrow. That's Burgers Back to Dak Day.
I might stop recording this podcast right now and go get one.
Recreational. I kind of consider we went ordering the burger just to get the taste out of my mouth.
Oh, man.
But I think I would have been sick.
Wow.
No, I really hated this burger.
You really hated this burger.
Did you not?
I don't know if I thought okay. So the elements of the burger are that you can see them making it right there, which actually is bad. Seeing them pull a hot dog out of one of those big metal tubs that they have at Costco,
right.
You're fine with that. But seeing them pull a burger patty out of there does not work.
There's a higher level of craftsmanship involved.
At Shake Shack?
With the burger, just in general, with burgers.
Yes. Than can be done at a Costco food court.
Yes.
Yes.
Which is part of the reason I was dubious in the first place. But in particular, so the bun was pretty good.
The bun was pretty solid.
The highlight, certainly, of this burger.
Yes.
Maybe the lettuce. Lettuce was perfectly adequate. It was crumulent.
Okay, so this is another. It was a burger on top type patty. Below it, you had tomato and special sauce. And then on above it, you had cheese and lettuce.
I thought the lettuce was below. And there was special sauce on both buns.
Which tasted like absolutely nothing.
It was bad.
It was bad. Bad? It didn't taste
bad. It was bad.
I love how much you hated it.
And the cheese was insufficiently melted.
Yes.
They just plopped it on at the end.
Yep.
Which is terrible. And then the burger patty itself was entirely too well done.
It was basically a non-starter, the burger patty.
I got to tell you know what it reminded me of?
What?
The burger patties that used to pull out of the, where they were sitting in the trays before Sonics games.
Oh, no.
In the media room. And at one point I ate one of those and got sick to my stomach. And never again in the last, that would have been 2005, in the remaining 3 years of the Sonics.
What are these trays that you're talking about?
You're at a buffet at a Mexican restaurant.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And it's just one of those.
That's
with
what they did.
Hamburger patties.
That's what happened. That's what happened at Costco.
That's the worst. That's horrible.
I mean, it tasted basically like nothing. It was a thick patty.
It reminds me, my comparison always for those was a hockey puck. It's like you're eating a hockey puck. It was bad.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I put ketchup and mustard on mine. You didn't do that on yours, so I feel like that might have helped out the flavor a little bit, made it a little bit more palatable. I'll be honest and say that I almost didn't finish the entire burger.
I wish I didn't.
No. I love the idea of Costco trying here, but the thought that this would be somehow competing with Shake Shack is absurd.
It is beyond ridiculous.
It's ludicrous. And also, it's not like it's $1.50, right? This is the most expensive item, as we've discussed, on the Costco menu.
Is it the same price as the Caesar salad? Is the Caesar salad also $5?
I have no idea. I'm just talking here. You're not supposed to question that.
do not question it.
But it's $5 versus I could have gotten almost 3 hot dogs and drinks for that same price.
You could have gotten 3. What do you mean almost 3? How much have you had to drink, sir? More importantly, you could have gotten a tavern burger for that price.
I could have gotten a hot dog and a slice of pizza for cheaper.
Yes, that is accurate.
Which is the best order to have at Costco.
That probably is.
This doesn't change my feelings about Costco.
Oh, no. Look, first off,
they're trying stuff out. I love when people try stuff out.
You know my rule about restaurants.
What's that?
A restaurant is only as good or as bad as the best item on the menu.
Okay. That seems like a good.
Otherwise, you don't order the other stuff. It's irrelevant.
Yes.
My lowest rating for grade for any of the burgers so far has been an 80.
Okay.
For 8-ounce burger bar, which is in the LAX airport, I discovered.
Really?
Yeah. Not near the Alaska gates, though. That was I think there was a smash burger over there. I would grade this a 50.
Not a 50.
I cannot recommend anyone else eat this burger.
Wow!
This is the thing.
These tanks are so hot.
He ate this. First off, this is the Jimmy Butler train of burgers.
Wow!
We ate this burger, so you don't have to. Man. That's our sacrifice. You're the listener.
Mad with giving things Fs right now.
I saw the response. It was very positive.
Giving everything an A or an F. I did not think it was that bad. I thought it was a 70. I mean, that is like a huge leap between those two grades. 20 points. I'm probably never going to eat it again, but I don't think it was unspeakably bad.
I cannot recommend that anyone else eat this burger.
What would you rather have? A burger that I made at my house with my own personal secret sauce? Oh,
100%.
Sauce? Really?
Oh, yeah. It wouldn't be that, like, overdone.
Huh. It'd be barely, like, barely cooked at all.
I think it made me sick to my stomach just the fact that I knew that I ate that.
Wow. Man,
look,
I don't even know who I am as a person anymore after eating that burger.
I'm not intentionally trying to give hot takes for this podcast. Like, I was upset as I ate this burger. And I couldn't say anything to you about it. Just had to sit there in silence and take it.
Oh, my God. Wow.
I don't know if we can go on. I think we might need a minute.
Okay.
So what should we review next week?
Well, what I want to do is I really want to start doubling up. Before I had the idea of playing basketball with you in Boulevard Park, we were going to double up the two different bars that we have burgers from, aside from Loretta's, of course, which is Brave Horse Tavern and Linda's.
Yeah, I'm really upset we didn't do that.
Are you? Because I basically made you eat this burger that you consider the worst burger.
Look, it's important. I'm glad we tried it.
Also, like, what's going on at the Seattle Times? Did they just reprint, like, a press release from Costco? Did somebody go there and eat that and think to themselves, this is competitive with Shake Shack?
I'm saying I don't believe everything I read in the Seattle Times.
Okay. We're going to have some hot takes about that later also.
Oh, no.
But I think we should do the two burgers in West Seattle this week.
So that is the Swinery. Mm-hmm. And Coastline Burgers.
Yes. So we're doubling up because we're getting near Elite Eight time.
We are. We're going to have to do that in like the month of August, right?
The month of August. Should we explain what's going to happen?
You've teased it. You have not explained this yet.
In the month of August, we're going to do an Elite Eight of burgers. Basically our top eight rated burgers because I don't really feel comfortable with just these ratings. Honestly, my feelings, the harshness with which both of us review burgers is much more extreme now. We've had a lot of burgers. We've judged things.
I think I would have felt the same way about this Costco burger at the start. I'd had a lot of burgers in my life beforehand. It's not like I was unaware of what they were supposed to taste like.
Okay. But I feel like at the end of this exercise, right, we'll have a more refined burger palate.
I hope so.
And that's why we're doing Elite Eight style, numbers 1 through 8, ranking them, top 8 burgers in Seattle. Every week, we're going to have a head-to-head matchup through the month of August.
That is correct.
And then maybe the Final Four or the championship game will take place at a special event of some kind.
I think that sounds like an excellent plan.
For that month of August, also, we'll be having on.
Yeah, because if it's just the two of us and we disagree, we would be at an impasse.
Yes.
We would be at a stalemate.
Whether we agree or not, I'm sure that there are quite a few of them that we will agree upon. But
not the Costco burger, apparently.
I mean, I don't think that's beating out anything else. But through the month of August, we're going to have on special guest, Third Pelton Brothers.
Oh, you can't mess with a Third Pelton Brother.
Yeah. Nobody can mess with a Third Pelton Brother, especially if they're a lot tougher than we are.
Some are.
Various Third Pelton Brothers to come on and be the tiebreaker in these burger battles.
Oh, I look forward to that.
Oh, I can't wait. Because it means that we're going to eat a lot more burgers.
Should we talk about my trip to Los Angeles last week?
Yeah, so you teased this online. Was the audio released?
Not yet.
Oh, see, this is the only place that you're going to hear about this.
Well, it's also been recapped on the Basketball Analogy podcast.
Repeatedly.
We had the second TBA Live podcast in Los Angeles, California, which was announced on Wednesday afternoon. I immediately went and booked my flight to LA to be there for a little bit over 24 hours to attend this.
I like that you're revealing that, because people were complaining about how short time they had to find out about it, that you even is one of the...
Oh, yeah. Had no idea.
One of the panelists, one of the hosts, didn't know until 2 days out.
Yeah. Was also able to pair that with the BET Celebrity Game.
Okay.
Which my friends at Three Point Productions were putting on Saturday at the BETX Experience. So that was quite an experience. It was my first time in LA proper since 2008.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's been an extraordinarily long time. That was the last time I flew into LAX. All these experiences, it's been a long time.
Rap music all of a sudden makes a lot more sense to you.
Well, I was thinking that while I was down there, like everything I know about LA is from the game GTA San Andreas. And so now it's like I had never been to Hollywood before. I've explored a new part of the map.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah. So there you go. So we did this at the Hollywood Improv, the famous Hollywood Improv, where many of the greatest comedians of all time have performed.
Mm-hmm.
And us.
And you.
Yeah. Did this, and they have a smaller lab space with room for, you know, probably about 80 people, I think,
the kids' table.
Yeah. We were right next door to Pod Save America, Love It or Leave It, was performing in the big room.
Yes.
And then apparently Jeff Garland was on the main stage.
Really? Wait, yeah. There are three stages?
Something like that.
All the way down, Jeff Garland, Love It or Leave It, and you?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, it seems about appropriate.
Yeah.
So it was fun. The aforementioned Seahawks Twitter deity, Mina Kimes, was there. All we were missing was at Seahawks to be there to have the complete trio. But no, that was great. We were able to catch up about the Seahawks. Hadn't seen her since the Bill Barnwell live podcast.
Catch up. What does catching up about the Seahawks entail?
I don't know.
This is a long Troy Maine Pope conversation.
Troy Maine Pope came up, obviously. That goes without saying.
Really came up?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there was three panels, the Monday panel.
I assume you discussed who's going to be the center of the future, things like that.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of Joey Hunt discussion. But Big Waz made a surprise visit from flying out from New York for this live podcast. First time I'd seen him in over a year. And I'd like walk in and see him wearing his Mets jersey. And I'm like, did I know you were supposed to be here? And he was like, no, it was a surprise. Then the Wednesday panel, led by Rachel Nichols, with Pablo Torre, Mina, and Zach Harper.
Oh, did you get to sit in on that one?
I did not.
Ah. Sometimes then, you get to sit in on that podcast, though, right?
Occasionally, yeah. And then I was part of the Friday Mailbag panel, where we took questions from the audience.
Oh.
One of them about Markelle Fultz versus Lonzo Ball.
Really?
Yeah. But that was kind of boring because it was talking about basketball.
And you shit all over Markelle Fultz. You're like, I'm in LA. I'm leaning into this.
Well, yeah. I mean,
you took off your shirt like Lonzo Ball in WWE.
LeBar. There was a lot of people there with Kobe jerseys. We had some Kobe Stanis in attendance. But overall, it was a great time. Hung out afterwards with people at the bar.
You hung out at the bar at the Improv?
Yep.
What about the BET Celebrity Game, though?
So I've been to the NBA Celebrity Game. I think last year was the first time I went to that. My first inkling that the BET Celebrity Game was going to be a little different was like the impromptu dance-off competitions in the crowd leading up to the game.
Wait, what?
Yeah, like
there were just dance-offs in the crowd?
Like they'd play, you know, whatever dance song that you would dance to, the Dougie at one point, or newer songs. I don't know. Whatever the kids are dancing to these days.
Okay.
And then like entire sections would start dancing and the camera would highlight specific people.
Wow. Yeah. Look at that.
So that was quite something.
Who are some of the celebrities who are participating in the BET Celebrity Game?
So Chris Brown was probably the biggest celebrity.
Oh.
The crowd loved Chris Brown. Especially the female members of the crowd. Mace was there.
Oh.
Yeah, he airballed a free throw.
Oh.
The level of basketball in this game was not good. The only like actual basketball player there was a couple.
Was Wynn Butler participating?
Sadly, no. There were a couple of white guys.
Wait, who are the white guys?
Michael sure.
Rappaport? I don't know if he counts.
No, he was not there. He was at the big three.
White Chocolate was my other guess.
Yeah. There was one who's like in a BET series in the fall, but I do not know either of them who they are. But Doug Christie was the Rainier Beach's own. Doug Christie was the only like actual basketball player besides like four professional dunkers who were there for the dunk contest beforehand.
Did they play?
They played, yeah.
The professional dunkers did.
They did.
Did Doug Christie dominate this game?
He didn't dominate. He was definitely good. He was like also at like out there early and warming up. He was like one of the people taking it actually seriously.
He's in the layup line or whatever. There are people dancing around him.
I would say that in the game, who is known for his, has claimed to have played briefly at Wazoo before being kicked out of school.
Wait, he didn't play?
Apparently the school has not validated this story.
I'm taking that as fact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He and Chris Brown were probably
the two
best.
I think he just goes by game now.
Oh, does he? I did not know that. They were the two best of the celebrity players.
Maybe in preparation for going, you should have listened to his album, LAX.
I guess I should have. Would that have told me how to handle the airport, like where to go?
That's what
it
is.
How to get to the... car service drop off, like the Lyft Uber drop off. Because I struggled with that for a little bit. You got to go up to the departures. It's confusing. Nick Cannon played. I'm trying to think who else. Those are probably the most notable celebrities that were in this game.
I liked your tweeting about it as if it was any other game.
As if it was a serious game. Yes. Yeah. And it actually got, like, even though the basketball was terrible, it got really dramatic at the end, including when, so there was a 5-point shot in this game, like several circles on the court from which you'd make a 5-point spot. And the one team was down 5 at the end of the game. And a player made a deep shot, but he was not actually standing on the 5-point shot.
Okay.
But like from where I was sitting in the crowd, you couldn't tell that he didn't actually make a 5. So everyone was like, oh, amazing overtime. What a great finish. But then they went to replay and determined that it was not actually a 5-point shot. Is Irv Gotti, who was coaching one of the teams, it was Irv Gotti and Fat Joe were the coaches. He was like very loudly getting on the microphone, like saying it wasn't a 5-point shot.
Wait, the coaches can just get on the microphone. Intense. Okay.
Yeah. It was something. It was an experience unlike anything else.
So he shot it from really far away. I want to understand this, but you couldn't see that he wasn't in one of the 5-point circles.
Right. Yeah, he didn't even have, like, wasn't even touching the 5-point circle.
Not even close to the 5-point circle, just a far shot. But the 5-point shot should just be a farther ring, right?
It should be. I suggested that afterwards.
To Irv Gotti.
Not to Irv Gotti.
You suggested this to my friends who were putting on the production. 3-point productions. Yes.
I don't know if that's more expensive to actually paint the line, but that would be better.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens next year. But the craziest thing to me is that there's a system for replay in the BET celebrity game.
I mean, I don't think there's like rules about the replay.
It was just impromptu. Irv Gotti demanded it, and so they did it.
Yeah, I think so.
Did you have any other thoughts about your trip to L.A.?
I had no good meals in L.A.
Not a single good meal?
Not a single one.
Like, you were supposed to eat some burritos while you were down there.
Yeah, it just wasn't enough time. Like I ate at the bar on Friday night because we never left the Hollywood Improv until I went back to my hotel.
Eating at the bar is this is the saddest thing in the world.
I mean, but that's where everyone was. And then like Saturday morning,
you should have just disappeared and found an In-N-Out.
It was too far away. Saturday morning, I had to eat.
You're really saying that you did look. You Google Maps it.
Oh, it was a couple miles away. Yeah. Saturday morning, I had to like eat like in the hotel in. Let's see, there's a JW Marriott right near the Staples Center in LA.
The JW? Is that where you stayed?
That was not where I stayed, okay. As a matter of fact. That's where Amin stays, and Brian Windhorst.
At the JW?
Up. Yeah.
In Austin, when you go to South by Southwest, at some point, it became the coolest hotel. So you're like, oh, where are you staying? You're like, oh, I'm at the whatever. And people are like, yeah, I'm at the JW. And you're like, what's that? And it's like, oh, it's the Marriott?
I mean, the JW Marriott is a fancier version of the Marriott. I don't know if you've actually been there.
Oh, okay. That's a fancy. I did. I had brunch there.
Yeah. So I went there for like the brunch and they had a buffet, which I ordered because I was kind of in a hurry to go check in for media, which I did not really know where I was going. And then it turned out it was basically just a hotel buffet, except they were charging $29
for
it.
Oh, damn.
So that wasn't great. And then afterwards, I just like had some guacamole at this Mexican restaurant we went to after.
So you had no good food at all.
It was like table-side guacamole, but even that wasn't that good. So it was a really disappointing weekend.
You were in the land of In-N-Out and didn't find any. I mean, how many burritos from the burrito bracket were around you?
I know. Well, I'm hoping to get back to L.A. at some point before too long here. So
because you've gone Hollywood after this trip.
I have. That's true.
You listen to that album by the game and you're convinced.
Speaking of Hollywood, should we talk about TV really quick?
I would love to.
Because last week was the finale for this season of the HBO show Silicon Valley. And next week, with the end of whatever season that is, you know, they've kind of got to divide it up into like 5 or 6 mini parts of the year. That means the return, season 3 of your favorite show on TV.
Oh, Ballers on HBO. I wanted to talk about Silicon Valley for a second here, but we're getting into this.
Let's start with Silicon Valley.
Okay.
And I think this is going to be a spoiler alert here. We can put in the post notes if you're reading this online or go to the website, and we'll put in the post notes when you should skip ahead to end the spoiler alerts. What did you think of this season? This is season 4 of Silicon Valley. Yeah. Yeah, I'm seeing that face you're making, and that's a fair face.
It kind of reminds me of that Costco burger.
No, it's better than the Costco burger. Because it's still a funny show.
Okay, I have a few problems with Silicon Valley.
Okay.
So I have one problem, which is the problem that I've had since its very first episode. Which is, this is my least fun take. Which is, in Silicon Valley, the actual Silicon Valley, there are issues that happen, right? There are people there. I mean, you have the CEO of Uber. Like, you have the board member of Uber who was part of the hockey ownership group.
Still part of it.
You know, there are actual issues that happen with sexism in Silicon Valley, racism that happens in Silicon Valley. There are issues that happen with workers' rights in Silicon Valley. And basically, all it amounts to on the show is some sort of wacky hilarity. Like, isn't it funny that these people have never been in first class, have only been on chartered planes? It's like, yeah, that's funny. But also, like, this is a serious issue that's happening in our country.
I mean, I think there's a place for satire.
But it's not even a place for satire. It's just completely ignoring the actual things that are happening and saying like, basically what you would assume if you just watch the show Silicon Valley is that people are kind of eccentric and a little bit nerdy, right? And that's what it kind of boils down to in the show. I mean, they're basically not addressing.
First off, it's a significant element of...
We're both putting our fingers in the exact same
way. The very Pelton gesture, the okay, like, is like, trying to make
like,
a point.
Okay, you stop talking.
There's a clear element of villainy, and one of the plot lines that really developed in season 4 is Richard Hendricks, not the former NBA prospect, going from someone who is like pure-hearted and just trying to get his technology out into the world into someone who's clearly doing some evil things.
I guess so, but it still feels like it's not really getting to the heart of the actual issues within Silicon Valley.
I mean, that's fair, like, but again, it's a comedy.
I understand, like, Richard Hendricks turning dark is an interesting thing that happened, but the show is bordering my feelings about a show like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, where because of police brutality, I had to stop watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I couldn't watch a show that's basically being lighthearted about a police force when so many things are happening
Brooklyn
in the country.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I will say, in its defense, has done a much better job of handling, you know, taking seriously those issues than Silicon Valley has.
I think they've definitely considered it, maybe even since I stopped watching.
Yeah, I mean, there was a show in this past season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine that very directly addressed it.
So that's good. And maybe that'll happen next year on Silicon Valley, but my fingers are not crossed.
I don't know if this is going to be your second problem.
Okay, yes.
But the real problem is that this show goes around and around in circles.
The arc of the show is exactly the same every single season.
Which it kind of has to be. They can't just become really successful, and they can't just be totally unsuccessful. They have to constantly maintain the stasis, which was obviously a problem with Entourage as well.
Shouts to Turtle.
That's my good friend Turtle. Right.
Shouts
there.
To your good friend Turtle.
He and I were chatting during the NBA draft last week.
Yes, that is true, but you still could change some things. They're literally in the same house. The only thing that has really changed in the entire series of Silicon Valley is we got Jack Barker, who I liked for a time, right? It's nice having him around.
I mean, he's a pretty good Steve Ballmer parody.
And then Ehrlich Bachman leaving at the end of the season.
And we'll see how that pushes things forward in season 5. I would say that my hopes are not high at this point.
When Kumail Nanjiani, what is his character's name?
Yeah, I can't remember either.
Well, Kumail Nanjiani.
I want to call him Pindar, but that's actually what he was on Franklin and Bash.
Oh, no. I knew you were going to work in Franklin and Bash. Shout out to Franklin. I knew there would be an F&B reference. When he became the CEO.
Oh, that was great.
I wanted that to continue for longer.
And it was one episode.
It's like one episode.
No, it's not
and then
enough.
Everything just gets swept under the rug. It's like, come on. There are lasting effects of things that happen, Silicon Valley.
Yeah, that's true.
Things don't just go away that easily.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's so difficult. And also, I've spent so much time being consumed by listening to Game of Thrones podcast and watching Game of Thrones and thinking about Game of Thrones. And it's a show where something will happen in, like, season 1, and it still hasn't paid off in season 7.
I mean, they do pay off some jokes. Like, the very end of the season was paying off a joke from earlier in the season.
Yeah, and that was nice. I thought that was nice about the airline. But also, wouldn't it amount to...
I didn't even mean that. I meant the smart refrigerator.
Oh, well, I meant where they ended the season where they're like stopping in Jackson Hole.
Yeah, I mean, that was good.
But basically, what the end of the season amounted to is everything is the same again. Gavin Bellison is back to Hooli. I like that he spent a season away from Hooli and wasn't necessarily the villain. But basically, it amounted to he's the villain again. Right. Everything's back to normal. Stay tuned for season 5.
Clearly, him and Richard Hendricks are operating on a different level now than they were before. So there's slight changes. And I just think you can't probably watch Silicon Valley for the plot. You have to watch it for the jokes.
And there are some fun moments poking fun at, you know, when they're talking about how cold it was because it was like 60 degrees or whatever. Like, I thought that was funny. I'm not completely against the show, and I continue to watch the show.
Right. It's got a right to exist.
But I feel like its next season is going to be... It's teetering.
Break.
It's teetering, and there's a chance that I may not watch it.
Yeah.
But what do you
I'm
think
I'm a completist, so really, like, only The Office when it got dark with the Jim and Pam relationship, that I dropped out. That was about it.
You know, they really wrapped it all up nicely after the show.
I watched the finale.
But what do you think about...
Sorry, spoiler alert on that one.
Silicon Valley going forward without Ehrlich Bachman.
He's obviously going to be a loss. Did you read the T.J. Miller interview in the Hollywood Reporter?
I kind of hated it and kind of loved it. It was a very T.J. Miller experience.
I guess I wasn't that familiar with T.J. Miller personally outside of the character.
Yeah, he's Ehrlich Bachman. You're familiar.
Oh, man. The shots that he took at... why can't I remember Richard's actual name now?
Andrew something? Andrew.
Nope, that's not it. Nope.
But he did talk about Richard Hendricks and was saying that he wants to be the lead on the show, so he's basically giving that to him. Which I was watching this last episode. I'd read that before I watched this last episode, and I thought to myself, can Richard Hendricks be the actual lead of the show? And I don't think the answer is yes to that.
It's Thomas Middleditch.
Oh, yeah, Thomas Middleditch.
I think he probably can be, but Ehrlich is definitely going to be missed. He was a terrific character.
What's in those Verizon ads with that beard, too?
That's a fair question.
Oh, come on.
What did you think of Jared this season? I thought he had a phenomenal season.
Did you? I mean, also, reading T.J. Miller loving Zach Woods, I was very into. Speaking of The Office, I was very into how much he liked him. I thought he had a pretty good season, too. He's becoming kind of like... almost too pious at the end. I'm not sure how I felt about that.
Becoming too pious. I think he was appropriately pious.
Appropriately pious.
Yeah. And Dinesh is Johnny's character.
And then also basically wrapping it up with everything's back to normal.
Yep.
So.
All right, let's talk about Ballers.
But the most important thing that happened on the season finale of Silicon Valley was the trailer for season 3 of Ballers on HBO.
So I watched this on DVR, so somehow I completely missed it.
You're completely missing me pumping my fist right now.
Oh my
Do you
goodness.
Want me to break it down for you?
You're also, you've got Suns Out, Guns Out, so it's a very Ballers on HBO look for you.
It might be dark right now, but we know the sun was out today. Okay, do you want to know some things about season 3 of Ballers on HBO?
Tell me about season 3 of Ballers
Bigger. On HBO. Badder, faster, Steph Curry, international. This trailer was basically just a list of international cities because they're going international. They're going to Chicago, LA, Las Vegas, London.
Those are all cities in the U.S.
Toronto, Medicine Hat. They're going everywhere. I think that the premise of season 3 of Ballers on HBO might be The Rock, whose name I have no idea that is on the show. He's just The Rock. His name might be Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
No, it's not that. Let me see if I can come back to the end of this discussion.
But the premise might be, as far as I can tell, that The Rock is trying to get a football team to Las Vegas.
Oh, hey.
Yeah.
There you go. Him and Mark Davis, really kindred spirits.
Not coming up with his name.
I'm going to get there. Yeah, where did we leave off at the end of season 2? I don't really remember. That was a long time ago.
You're not supposed to remember.
Okay, good.
Gone. This has gone from your mind.
This is going to be bigger and better and faster.
I think that the Rock and, oh God, what is his name?
His partner?
The bald guy.
Joe?
Joe, you remember his name? Is that his real name? But you remember his... Rob Corddry.
Yes.
The Rock and Rob Corddry, I think, own the company now. And they're taking it international. And let me tell you, they might be going a little bit too hard.
Oh, no. Yeah. That doesn't sound like them at all.
They might be pushing it a little bit too far. The show really has a strange perspective. Oh, and he gets in a fight with the agent. With the one agent who exists in this world.
Wait, his agent?
I don't know if he's his agent. He's the agent for the defensive tackle that he negotiates.
Yeah, but that was his old agent.
Okay. And, yeah, and also is the agent for every single athlete that The Rock works with.
Yeah, yes, that's true.
But so he gets into a fight with him because he's pushing it too hard.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, the show really has a curious perspective about, I mean, maybe it's different in sports than it is in music, about the life of a business manager.
No, I do not think it's different in sports.
It's exactly the same.
I think it's different on Ballers.
It's different on HBO. Ballers on HBO?
Yes.
Because it seems like, you know, it's really, he's going to be living a fast life. You know, there's going to be women, there's going to be cars, it's international, Steph Curry's involved.
Still coming, not coming up with that name. I'm giving myself to the end of the episode.
If you come up, you should just scream it out at some point.
Really good.
Maybe you'll come up with it by the time we talk about the Seahawks in August.
All right, anything else on Ballers on HBO?
It's going to premiere at some point in July. And I can't wait. I'm on the edge of my seat.
Wow, that was a very specific thought on when it's going to premiere. Stay tuned for sometime in July. Just keep your TV on HBO at all time.
Sometime Ballers will come on. Ballers on HBO will be on. You know, we don't know. You know, the second season, there was the first season, Ballers on HBO.
July 23rd. I didn't realize it was that far away still.
You know, if they had... If I could get an app that gave me a countdown to the season premiere of Ballers on HBO, I would download it and look at it frequently. The second season was the brilliant second season of Ballers on HBO. And I don't want to have to call this third season the kind of disappointing third season of Ballers on HBO.
That would be horrible.
So I'm very excited for July 23rd.
Okay.
All right. Was there any Sonics Arena news this week?
A little bit here. Earlier this week, Sports Press Northwest, Art Thiel, reporting that the city council has sent a letter to Seattle Mayor Ed Murray indicating that they plan to hire an independent consultant to vet the arena proposal, key arena renovation proposal.
His name's Robert Mueller.
Yes, he's not busy with anything at all. They asked the mayor to complete negotiations on a memorandum of understanding with the Oakview Group by September 12th, which would allow time for at least one public meeting before a vote, which they anticipate holding sometime after the December 3rd expiration of the memorandum of understanding with Chris Hansen. And they listed five bullet points where they seek more information about this deal. The level of city investment, due diligence on the finances of Oakview Group, operations and maintenance, how that will be handled for renovated Key Arena, transportation, which of course is one of the big questions that Oakview has yet to answer, and then equitable opportunities in terms of the workers at Key Arena.
Okay. So do you want to walk through these really quick in your perspective of where those stand from the previous agreement?
Okay, so city investment, I think, is still to me the biggest question in terms of the tax revenues that they seek to have diverted to the operations fund. Mm-hmm. That's obviously the biggest question to me. Due diligence, not really a concern. I feel pretty comfortable with Oakview's finances. Operations and maintenance, you know, probably some double checking there, but it doesn't stand out to me as a concern. Transportation, again, obviously a big one. Equitable opportunities, not really a concern. I think that should be something they should be comfortable handling.
Okay.
So
you don't see any of these being big hangups?
Well, I mean, I still think the question of how much money they're taking out of tax revenues is a big hangup. And transportation is potentially a big hangup as well. But it's nothing. We didn't learn anything new from this letter, I would say, except that it's going to have independent oversight. Also, King 5 reporting over the past week that the City of Seattle's Landmark Board accepted nominations for Key Arena and then other buildings nearby on the Seattle Center campus to be designated as historic landmarks, advancing that process, which we all anticipate will result in them being declared historic landmarks.
Okay.
And then the last, well, one other bit of news on the, not necessarily on the arena front, but on the Sonics front. An interesting interview with Daryl Morey with the Good Judgment Project, which is run by Philip Tetlock, who wrote the book Super Forecasting. And it deals with basically...
Really?
Yeah. So that's something that Morey is obviously interested in, how to better forecast the future. They talked to him about how that works in the NBA. And the question they asked him to forecast was, what are the chances of NBA expansion by 2022? And Daryl Morey said 60%.
60%.
It's the Houston Rockets GM, by the way, in case you're not familiar with Daryl Morey, who earlier today traded for Chris Paul.
Cheers to Daryl Morey, because he's having a nice offseason. Although you gave that trade an A for the Clippers, so.
I mean, the trade itself, it gave up a lot. Getting the signing Chris Paul, that gets an A.
Okay.
That gets an A.
One of the tenets of super forecasting was that it's better if you give a specific number. This might be a little bit too round for me to feel good about it.
That's an interesting point. But yeah, I mean, that's obviously much higher than anyone I think in Seattle anticipated. And
do you think that Daryl Morey is privy to any conversations about this?
I mean, he must be privy to some.
Yeah.
He's a general manager of the NBA. I haven't heard from any other people who are general managers of the NBA that this is happening.
Okay.
So, and again, 60% is not 100%. You know, there's one of the things they talk about in the interview is there's a tendency for people to view things in three frames. Either it's not going to happen, it's 50%, it could go either way, or it's 100% it's going to happen.
This is more than 50, so it's 100.
Exactly. That's not the way to think about it.
Yes.
It's significantly less than 100. But again, it's much better than we thought. One of the pushback I got on Twitter when I posted about this was people saying, well, you know, we heard from Tim Leiwicki that NBA expansion is unlikely. The NHL is going to come first. Was he lying about this? Like, to be clear, no. What Tim Leiwicki was saying about the NBA was what everyone has said about the NBA, including Adam Silver, who is the commissioner and is definitely privy to inside information about this. So I don't think that anyone is like trying to steer you wrong about this, but maybe there is a little more reason to be hopeful about this than we thought. What I followed up on Twitter with was, adjust your Bayesian prior accordingly.
Yeah, what does that mean?
So the Bayesian way of thinking basically is you have a default expectation. Like you walk around with a percentage chance of all sorts of things. Like what's the percentage chance that a meteor strikes and kills us all during the middle of this podcast?
Uh-huh.
And that's like a really low percent.
There's some person who talked in percentage chances that I really liked. I wish I remember what that was.
Like about Seattle sports?
No, not about Seattle sports. About something happening, and they were like, "Oh, this is like a 30% chance or whatever." Like they talked in percentage chances rather than like the takes away is to be like, "This will happen. This won't happen. This person is better."
So what the Bayes formula lays out is there's a specific formula for if some you know you have this prior information, and then you get more information, how you kind of weight that to update your expectation. And in this case, I don't know that it would change my prior guess, which, I don't know, by 2022, maybe 15%.
Wow.
Maybe it pushes up to 20. It doesn't push up to 60, but it does increase it. And I haven't run through the math here, but that's just kind of...
What would the math be?
I'm not sure.
It's impossible to run math about this.
But it's basically just kind of a good way to think about things.
Yes.
Which is... How valid is this information? How much should it change my prior assumption?
But it makes sense why people are so hopeful if your expectation is 15% and Daryl Morey is 60 and he's an NBA GM and all you are is a deity on Seahawks Twitter.
I suppose that's true. I also know not to get my hopes up because they get dashed. Speaking of which...
Daryl Morey is out there getting superstars.
That's true.
His hopes never get dashed.
His hopes got dashed when he traded for Ty Lawson. Speaking of which... In the news on Wednesday, whatever day this is, we're recording on a different day than usual, Phil Jackson and the New York Knicks mutually agree to part ways after 3 years at the helm of the Knicks. And the reason this is in this section...
Okay, I was going to say I've heard about this, but...
...is because you'll recall that had the Sacramento Kings moved to Seattle when Chris Hansen tried to purchase them in 2013, Phil Jackson would have been the team president of the Seattle SuperSonics.
No.
And it's a really fascinating what if, because he would have hired Steve Kerr as head coach. The Warriors didn't have an opening then. Kerr would have come to Seattle. Would it have been worth it to have Steve Kerr as coach, to have Phil Jackson as team president and presumably running the triangle?
Man, it's like, what is Pete Carroll if you take away John Schneider?
Not only take away John Schneider, if you replace him with, I don't know, the former Colts GM. I should know exactly who that is to complete the joke. Yeah, I mean, the idea of having both Pete Carroll and Steve Kerr coaching together.
There'd be so much grit in Seattle.
It would be incredible. It would be so awesome.
I mean, really, it's worth it just having a team, though. It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
I mean, I've said this a million times. Like, people, I remember when the Sonics left, people were like, why do you care? The team sucks or whatever. And it's like, screw you, I hate you. Second off, having a team is so much better than having a good team.
It's like, why it would be more exciting for us to have the Sonics back than any team win a championship, because we don't even have a chance of winning a championship.
Yes.
You agree with that, right?
Probably, yeah. I mean, would any team, like, it's basically just the Seahawks, I guess, various Husky sports.
Yeah,
of course I'd rather have a team back. You're talking about being excited for one game, basically, versus having 82 games to pay attention to, hope every single offseason. When these transactions happen, when these trade grades happen that you're talking about, free agent signings, I got no stake.
Your team, not the Thunder.
I mean, I do. A lot of good things are happening for not the Thunder, right?
But not the Thunder lost the MVP to the Thunder.
That is true. So this is mostly just an interesting what if, though.
Yeah. Well, the other interesting aspect of this is, you know who's advising the Knicks on their executive search?
Oh, who's that?
Tim Leiwicki.
Really?
Because, I mean, obviously, Oakview, Madison Square Garden, which
owns
the
Knicks.
He's got
his hands in a lot of pots here.
He does here. By the way, there's Ryan Grigson, former Colts
team. Oh, Ryan Grigson.
Ryan Grigson. That covers us on Sonics Arena. So I think
I want to talk offseason really quick.
Okay.
What's going to happen with the Celtics? What does it mean for Isaiah Thomas? Because by the time we talk next week, something likely will have happened.
You know, if they are to add Gordon Hayward,
mm-hmm,
and then potentially trade for Paul George on top of that. I mean, on the one hand, you can't really like trade Isaiah Thomas for spare parts at that point. That doesn't make any sense. But on the other hand, you do have a lot more ball handling, so maybe you have a little less need for Isaiah Thomas. So I'm not really sure.
Wow.
That was the coldest take I could possibly offer.
It was not necessarily a cold take. It was more just things don't look that great for Isaiah in Boston. You're saying I should be cheering against them getting Gordon Hayward and Paul George?
Yeah, I guess so.
Really?
If your number one priority is for Isaiah Thomas to stay in Boston.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily my number one priority.
I mean, if you want Isaiah Thomas to win, then that's great. Like, the team would be way better.
Okay.
All right. Anything else on the NBA offseason?
It's kind of sad about Isaiah Thomas right now. Okay. Anyway.
Don't adjust your Bayesian prior too much there. It's time for probably your favorite part of the show, even though maybe not last week.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you. Okay. Before I get into the hot takes, I do have one hot take. And I went to the Mariners game today. And hot take... It was a lovely time.
Oh, there you go. It actually sounds very cold.
A great day at the ballpark. I ate for the first time ever peanuts at a baseball game.
Was it everything you hoped?
I didn't feel great after it, to be honest. It's not a lot of times. I grew up, as you know, with a phantom peanut allergy. A peanut allergy that did not exist. Eventually found out.
An assumed peanut allergy.
Found out it didn't exist. This is the first time that I've been at a baseball game with the opportunity to eat peanuts.
Because your children have a very real and life-threatening peanut allergy.
I have to say, I felt a little bloated.
Oh, no.
No. But I also found, I'm just like, you just throw the shells on the ground? I'm like, wait, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah, no, that's what
I'm like,
do.
How is this customary? Anyway, okay. Real hot takes here.
Okay.
I have to say, I've been reading a lot of stories out there, especially coming from the Seattle Times, saying, calling my shot. This is the year. This is the year that the drought is ending.
You know, Matt Calkins wrote that column on Sunday.
And I'm calling my shot, too. And it ain't happening. What about this season up to this point suggests to you that the Mariners are going to make the playoffs? Is it the fact that they got swept by the Phillies at home? Is it the four games out of three games out of the wild card, or the six teams that they need to climb to reach the wild card. They need to go past six teams to get there. Or is it the fact that Felix Hernandez clearly is not a major league level pitcher at this point? Or are you just seeing one half of the team? Did you just get excited about six games in a row and make a hot take when they're at the highest peak? Because I would caution, you don't make your take at the highest peak. You wait. Oh. You wait till after that peak. Wait till after the four-game losing streak happens, which always happens.
Are you saying regress your opinions to the mean?
You regress your takes to the mean. Because it is not happening. I don't see anything about this season to suggest that this is the year that the Mariners make the playoffs.
So when Matt Calkins published that column, the Mariners, they had only lost one game after that six-game winning streak that you mentioned. At that point, they were still at about a 27% chance of making the playoffs, according to FanGraphs projections. Since then, that has dropped basically by
plummeted
to 14%.
I'm calling my shot. A team with a 14% chance of making the playoffs has about a 14% chance of making the playoffs.
I mean, that's a pretty good shot to call. They're probably not going to make it. Oh, Houston is already at 100%. That's incredible. Have been for a long time.
This is not a team that is a bad luck team. You remember the Mariners? I think this was 2 years ago. The Mariners were a bad luck team. They had a great run differential. They should have made the playoffs that year. This team is not that team. They still have a negative run differential. They look like a 500 team or a slightly below 500 team, which, hot take, is what they are.
So bad news for the Mariners today, in addition to losing this game in the ninth inning, which is that Drew Smyly, it turns out, is going to need, after not pitching all year so far, is going to need Tommy John surgery and is out for basically the next year. So there you go.
But they're healthy now. They got John Segura back, Mitch Haniger, but they have no pitching staff.
It does appear that way.
Even James Paxton's not good anymore. What happened to Cy Young winner James Paxton?
That's amazing that regressed to the mean. Who would have seen that coming?
Yeah, a hot take here. Ben Gamble might regress to the mean also.
All right. Anything else on the Mariners?
I wanted them to be positive.
Did you?
I did.
Okay.
I was cheering for the Mariners. They hit all these home runs today. I clapped. I might have wooed at some point.
Oh, wow.
I didn't woo, but I clapped.
That sounds like quite a lot of investment in the game. All right, should we talk about the Seattle Sounders, who had the most fascinating two-point week I think that you possibly can. At Wednesday at home against Orlando City, leading 1-0 for most of the game until with, I think, literally the final kick of the ball, a Kaká free kick from just outside the box. Scott Sutter heads it home to equalize, and the Sounders lose at home 1-1.
Devastating loss.
But then the Sounders go down to Portland, face the hated rival Timbers on Sunday night in a game that got moved from the afternoon to the evening because of the astonishing heat wave.
Really? It got moved that day?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was much hotter during the day. Still very hot at that point.
Yeah, I don't think I've basically ever seen a soccer game be stopped for a water break. So a hydration break.
Well, I mean, it happened during the World Cup that was played in Brazil. You've never seen an MLS game, I think, probably.
Yes.
Certainly not one in Portland.
Portland, too. Yeah.
So Sounders get an early goal from Jovan Jones. Things are looking good. Until Brad Evans commits a foul in the box, is not playing the ball, is red carded and given a penalty. Timbers equalize, score a second goal just before halftime. This is, you know, like, I think Evans was, the foul was in like the 40th minute. So it's like two goals in 5 minutes from the Timbers going into halftime. And everything looks very dark when we talk to each other at halftime.
It really escalated quickly.
And Sounders unable to do anything most of the second half, but the Timbers can't kill off the game by getting a goal. And then the exact opposite scenario, where Roman Torres, of all people, like I noted, like I was, as soon as, I forget who was broadcasting this game along with Taylor Twellman, but you know, he calls like Torres setting into the box. I'm like, that's the exact last person you would want on a cross. But lo and behold, Torres finds Clint Dempsey's head, and Clint Dempsey heads it home for the equalizer, and Sounders win 2-2 in Portland.
I mean, almost even more devastating, but losing that or tying that game to the Sounders, where Portland dominated the game after the man is sent off, They're a man up. They can't finish it. And then somehow giving up a goal to the Sounders with 10 men, it was a huge point for the Sounders to pick up there.
So the debate that we had on Twitter after I posted a poll about it was, would you have preferred to win the Orlando game and lose the Portland game or draw both of them? Now, obviously, as you pointed out, from a rational perspective, that is not even a question. Because you get 3 points for a win, and you only get 2 points for two draws.
Yes.
But you know what's not rational? Hating the Portland Timbers.
What won that?
I think it was like 4-3 in favor of the two draws. There were not a lot of votes on that poll, as it turned out.
Here's the thing. Is the Sounders have two matches in hand versus the LA Galaxy, who are in sixth place in the Western Conference, right? They've played two. They don't have two in hand. They've played two more matches than the Galaxy.
They have minus. They have two out of hand.
They're a point down from the Galaxy, and their goal differential is -5 at this point. I mean, the Sounders. I don't know how they fare in expected goals.
Well, it's about the 538 Soccer Power Index projections have them about 50-50 to make the playoffs.
But at this point, we can't expect the Sounders to make the playoffs. We can't go through the rest of the season assuming that what has happened in the last 5 years as a Sounders fan will happen again.
I mean, I think it's still likely to happen. So we'll see what the Sounders are able to add in terms of a designated player during the July transfer window.
But also, we've seen designated players come over and not have the same kind of impact that Nicolas Ladero had last year.
That's true. So a report that Wesley Sneijder, the Dutchman,
really?
Is near a report. No, not with the Sounders.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that was with LAFC. I thought that was the Galaxy. I misread that. Sneijder would be playing starting in 2018. We drove past on the freeway going out to the airport, the LAFC stadium. There in the LA Coliseum complex. But the Sounders linked this week with Paraguayan forward winger Derlis Gonzalez, who has been at Dinamo Kiev. A report by Spanish language reporter Nico Moreno suggesting that they are the favorites to sign him at this point. He's 23 years old. He cost Kiev 9.4 million euros when they bought him in July 2015. You know, saw some limited action for them, including in the Champions League. Has played for the Paraguayan national team, had a game-winning goal for them in World Cup qualifying. So I think an exciting prospect to add to the team.
I'm curious where he's going to play, though.
Yeah, I mean, they're clearly still trying to... Brian Schmetzer's clearly still trying to figure out where everyone is going to fit. We saw a slightly different lineup with Morris playing on the wing and Will Bruin on top on Sunday with Clint Dempsey coming in off the bench.
This is terrible news for Harry Ship.
It's not great news for him.
But the Sounders need more in the attack at this point.
Clearly, they're not scoring goals. So the Sounders also in action Wednesday night in the U.S. Open Cup, losing 2-1 at San Jose, playing a mixture of a couple of regulars, a couple of reserves, and then a number of S2 players again.
So why don't the Sounders care about the Open Cup anymore?
I mean, I don't know if they necessarily don't care about the Open Cup anymore. I mean, I think the congestion of the schedule in this period was probably a big factor. So the Sounders had played, you know, two games last week, this match, and then they play again on July 4th at Colorado as their final game before the MLS breaks for the CONCACAF Gold Cup coming up after that. I think if the schedule had been different, we might have seen more regulars. But, yeah, it's disappointing to see the Sounders, you know, not really field their best lineup. They went down to 10 men in this game, actually equalized with 10 men on an Aaron Kovar free kick, but then surrendered a goal after the 80th minute at San Jose.
It's kind of disappointing for us coming to expect that the Sounders are going to have very long runs in the U.S. Open Cup for so many years.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fact that they are, you know, in, like, they need points in the MLS schedule. The Earthquakes, I think, probably saw this as a real opportunity to salvage something this season. They fired their manager, Dominic Kinnear, on Monday. So this was a really much more important game for them, and we saw them play
this is a team that's
more regular
in the
lineup.
Playoffs right now, ahead of the Sounders.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. Speaking of teams that are trying to salvage something of the season, Colorado, who the Sounders, you'll recall, faced in last year's Western Conference Finals, has an MLS low of 16 points so far this season. They have the worst offensive attack in MLS, according to Soccer Power Index, and further weakened, perhaps, by the fact that they lost three players to injury in their U.S. Open Cup loss on Tuesday.
I guess that's maybe a reason. If you're scoring at home, then losing
that's
three
why.
Players.
Yeah, that is why. Including Shkelskin Gushi, who was, you'll recall, a key figure in their offensive attack last season. And their manager, Pablo Mastroni, declined to speak to reporters after the match, but could be heard yelling at his team behind closed
who
doors.
Who made you coach?
So things not going super great in Colorado.
I mean, this could not come at a better time for the Sounders.
I checked out some Colorado, like their Reddit, the Rapids Reddit.
Are there people on there?
There are a few people on there. Okay. They are very pessimistic about their chances against the Sounders in this match.
Good.
As it turns out.
I mean, this is one where the Sounders, would you put their percentage chances out of winning this game?
I think maybe 45-50%, depending how those injuries go.
Of the Sounders winning?
This is in Colorado.
Still?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's hard to win a match.
Okay. I feel like it's a better percentage chance than that. I feel like you're nearing like 60%.
To win? That's pretty high on the road. That's extraordinarily high.
If they don't win, it's a bad sign.
I think if they lose, it's a bad sign. I don't think a draw is a bad sign.
If they lose, it's a terrible sign. Look, the MLS season is very long, right? But
it's not that long.
We're getting into a little bit more of the meat of the MLS season.
Yeah.
Things are starting to matter a little bit more.
I mean, we're about at the point last year where Ziggy Schmidt got fired and Brian Schmetzer took over and Nicola Ladero came over.
And the situation that the Sounders are in right now is not that much better than the situation they were in
last
year.
It's a little better. I think they were like second from the bottom in the table last year.
Oh, man. What a rise.
I know. They won the MLS Cup.
Yeah, that was great.
How crazy is that?
We'll always have that.
We will. They can't take that away from us. Seattle Storm update. They also are struggling a little bit right now. Lost 85-82 at home on Friday to Phoenix in a game where Brittany Griner had her first dunk of the season against the Storm. And then on Tuesday started a road trip at Washington in a game that was played at 12 noon local time, 9 a.m. Pacific time, and the Storm looked like they were asleep in this game, losing 100-70.
Wait, now how is there a time zone difference between Washington and Washington?
That's a great question. If you ask the NFL shot, the Storm were playing at home.
But things not looking great for them?
Definitely slumping below 500 for the first time this season since going 0-1 at 6-7. Then Thursday, they will travel to Connecticut, Saturday at Dallas on this road trip. Both of those teams playing pretty well. So, you know, could be a tough time for the Storm getting a win on this road trip.
Are you following the Seattle Reign at all?
I read a story about their use of this new Microsoft system to take in the player tracking data that they get in practice and utilize that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
It sounded like they had a match very similar to the Sounders in terms of coming from behind to draw late in the match.
Nice. Megan Rapinoe with a goal at the end.
I do not know. I do not know who scored.
She plays on the Reign, right?
She does, yes.
Okay, good.
That is correct. Should we talk about UW Sports?
Yeah, kind of a busy week for UW Sports.
Surprisingly busy for late June. So the Husky men's basketball team officially signed Nziah Carter. In a press release, new head coach Mike Hopkins had this to say. Nziah is an unbelievable athlete who has the ability to get to the rim and attack with the best of them. He plays way above the rim, and he's just scratching the surface of what his potential could be. Being from New York, I've been following him for a while and have seen him just consistently improve and develop. He's excited to be here, fits the Husky DNA perfectly, has a great mindset, and we're excited to have him join our program. Hove!
You were so excited to have that hove that you couldn't even make it through the last line. I can't wait to hear what he says at the end of this. it could barely make it through.
But the Huskies also, they haven't announced this yet, but securing, apparently by all reports, another commitment from the state of New York.
Nice.
Huskies putting
Phil
a wall
Jackson
around the state of New York.
We're just repeating your tweets here.
You are. It was a good tweet. Got a lot of likes. The New York Gatorade Player of the Year, 6'7" forward Hamir Wright from Albany, who had planned to attend prep school at Brewster Academy in the hopes of improving his stock, but decided instead to stick with the 2017 recruiting class and sign with the Huskies. He's a four-star recruit, ranked 80th in the ESPN 100.
How much could he improve his stock from there?
Yeah, I don't know. That's
maybe this is just Husky standard speaking, and we're speaking where like 80th in the country seems really good to us. But
no, I mean, yeah. No, I mean, I guess just kind of the specific offers may not have been exactly what he wanted in terms of East Coast schools. But
so clearly, he decided to go as far west as he could.
Yeah, clearly Mike Hopkins' connections in New York paying off. So Wright had played with Carter on the Albany team in the EYBL, the Nike EYBL, where Carter is currently playing. Wright isn't playing there this year, but played there in the past. And you know who they played with before?
Who was that?
Jim Boeheim's son, Buddy.
Oh, well, look at that.
Who is also a top recruit.
Old Buddy Boeheim. Yep. I guess what this means to me is, long-term, Mike Hopkins is not going to be recruiting New York that much. We know this.
It seems unlikely that there is going to continue to be a New York to Washington pipeline. Unless, of course, they think they're going to D.C.
But what it means to me is that he was so well connected in the area, and it's something that I think he reasonably could set up here. He was so well connected that he's able to go find these players who are pretty solid and interesting players, yep, very deep into the process.
And it's a way, I think, to supplement the fact that he doesn't yet have those ties on the West Coast.
And it makes me confident that he's able to make these relationships. Granted, he had a long time in the upstate New York area, and if these were players who are playing in Albany, you know, I think Syracuse is a big deal there. But I feel confident that given the amount of talent in the Northwest, I think that he's able to make roots here. And for last-minute players to bring in, that's pretty solid.
We did see Jerron Brooks from Garfield commit to USC this week and not have UW in his top five when he announced that. So that a little bit of a blow, although at this point, the Huskies have no scholarships for 2018. Because the only senior on the roster is Dan Kingma, who presumably, to make room for Wright, will be moving back to a walk-on next season. So we'll see if anyone ends up being part of the 2018 recruiting class.
At least he just didn't commit to Arizona.
That's true. That's nice. So I think Wright, notably, even though he's very skinny still, I think he played four at the high school in AAU level, and I think he'll probably be that stretch four to help fill in some minutes there, where clearly the Huskies don't have a lot of interior depth with just Noah Dickerson at power forward, and then Sam Timmons and Devin DeRusso at center. So, and then I think that I mentioned this a few weeks ago when he first committed here, makes it all the more likely that Nziah Carter ends up redshirting this year to me.
Okay.
When you've got that full complement now of scholarship
but
players.
But it's nice to be able to have players to redshirt. Oh, hopefully they won't transfer.
It's great to have players to redshirt.
I mean, having enough depth to allow players to redshirt is very huge.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the great redshirts, CJ Wilcox, Andrew Andrews, it's been very successful in the Huskies for the Huskies in the past. How about Husky football?
On the football side, the Husky football team picking up a huge recruit. Picking up a commitment from four-star offensive lineman Mateo Mele out of Tucson, Arizona.
Now, did you name your youngest son after him?
Yes. Aside from him having that name, this is huge for a couple of reasons. Number one, the place to me where the Huskies really need to compete at the highest level, and the place that I see a difference in their recruiting and their roster overall from being a good Pac-12 team to being a good national team, is on the offensive line. I mean, when we looked at the line, the Husky line versus Alabama's, and especially go against Alabama's D-line, granted, we're not in that same realm right now, but it's at that point where everybody can have good wide receivers. Everybody can have good running backs. Everybody has good quarterbacks.
But I still think that's not quite true.
Having a good offensive line is so different. And picking up a four-star player, so also, I guess a little bit of bad news, that, and especially because of the team that they lost him to, but out of Garfield, the Huskies lose wide receiver Treshawn Harrison. But to me,
to Oregon.
To Oregon. So a four-star wide receiver and a four-star offensive lineman are not built the same.
You feel you'd rather have the four-star offensive line?
Of course, 100% of the time. So I went and crunched some numbers here.
Okay.
Look, first off, it sucks to lose a player from Garfield, right? It's our backyard. He's a four-star player. Could play more than wide receiver.
Not a good week for the Huskies recruiting in Garfield.
But when you look at scout.com, the amount of four-star or better wide receivers that there are 72 four-star or better wide receivers.
Interesting.
Offensive linemen overall, every single position on the offensive line, of which you start five every single play. Look, a lot of teams play a lot of wide receivers every play, but they're almost never playing five wide receivers at a time unless you're somebody like Wazoo. There were 51.
Even the Cougs don't really play five wide receivers. They almost always have a running back out there.
51.
That's wild.
Four-star or better offensive linemen. There are just not a lot of players out there. When you think about that.
Or they're just graded differently.
I mean, the way that these things are graded. But so a four-star wide receiver is much less valuable than a four-star offensive lineman.
Yeah, the replacement level in terms of stars, at least, is much higher.
And you look at it, and like quarterback, you play one of those every single play. There are 29 of those. Running back, you most often play one of those. Maybe you have a rotation. There are 28 of those. Picking up a four-star better offensive lineman is huge. It is the most important thing you can do, and it's what separates you from being a good Pac-12 team to being a competitive national team. But also, this is going into the hometown of a rival Pac-12 school and picking up this commitment.
Right.
This is not somebody who is in the Huskies' backyard. This is going into Tucson, Arizona, and getting the signing, who I can tell you Arizona would love to have.
I'm sure they would.
So I think this was a huge signing for Chris Peterson and shows, look, he's still signing wide receivers. I'm not saying he's ignoring the wide receiver position, but
yeah, I mean, they signed a number early in this class, which probably was a factor in his decision.
This is the point where Chris Peterson needs to start getting serious on the lines. With the increased recruiting clout that they have from going to the college football playoff, they need to go out there and get better offensive linemen, better defensive linemen. The defensive linemen have been great so far.
Yeah, I don't know that they need to get better defensive linemen. If they get equally good defensive linemen, I think that'll be fine.
And they're also very good at coaching defensive linemen. But these two positions are the difference between these good teams and competing at national level teams.
Do you have any thoughts on the recruiting class as it stands as a whole?
I mean, I think it's a pretty solid recruiting class. There was word this week that Jacob Sermon, the quarterback who they have coming in, you know, by all accounts, a top 10 quarterback and somebody who seems pretty committed to UW out of Bothell High School, that there were rumblings, USC lost their backup quarterback, that they were knocking on his door. They're basically looking around the Pac-12 and they're looking at a recruit from Utah and then also at Jacob Sermon, seeing gauging interest. But it seems like he tweeted after Mateo Mele committed that he would never hit the ground or something like that.
So nice.
I think he's probably pretty committed to
USC. USC needs to look elsewhere, is what you're saying?
But then there's also, I mean, we've talked about this a little bit. Again, three wide receivers that they have, including Marquise Spiker, who looks like a top 10 wide receiver. But this one really pulls it together to me.
And an important thing, by the way, I heard from Black Trey at the live show.
What's that?
Husky's recruiting a dude from Compton who he described as his cousin, so, and is legit. So,
that's all I need.
Yeah. Either way, I want him on the Huskies.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we want young Jay-Z, we want young Nate Dogg, and we want Black Trey's cousin.
Exactly. All right, on that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.